Good morning. I'm opening this meeting of the House Committee on Revenue. Today is Wednesday, May 15th. This is the House Committee on Revenue, but as is typical for this kind of a meeting, we welcome our guests, the Senate Revenue Committee. So welcome, senators. We have only one thing on our agenda. I'm opening an informational meeting, which is the revenue forecast. Mr. Allen.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committees. This is the quarterly forecast. This is the main forecast that sets the bar for the budget for next biennium, as well as the kicker base. And Mark McMullen and Josh Lehner here from the Office of Economic Analysis to provide the update.
Thank you. And while you're making your way to the table, I would like to let the committee and anyone else know, if you are using some sort of resource to look at documents online, you should refresh that resource, because there are now documents available that have just been made public.
All right. Thank you, Chair Nathanson, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mark McMullen, Oregon State economist, and we'll get right to it today. Okay, so the economic outlook is really playing out according to script, which is the story we've been telling you the last few times we've been here, is it's we're still growing, but at a slower and slower rate every consecutive quarter that we come and meet. And that's continued to happen this last quarter with now, in terms of employment growth, you see here, Oregon is really indistinguishable over the past year from the average state. And further slowing is still expected going forward, as we have quite a few policy drags at the federal level, both at fiscal and monetary policy, with the expiring or lack of a push from tax cuts and spending policy, as well as the expected drag from monetary policy going forward. But the main issue with this slowdown is that there's a lack of slack in the labor market, that industries across the state are complaining about difficulty finding workers, and that will continue going forward, given that the unemployment rate's so low and we have a lot of pressure from demographics on the labor force. And so that's the first issue that Josh is going to talk about real quickly at a regional basis, is the impact of the aging workforce.
Chair Nathanson, members of the committee, for the record, Josh Lehner with the Office of Economic Analysis. And as Mark is saying, right, we're transitioning down to more sustainable rates of growth. Our expected labor force growth and population growth and economic growth, for that matter, are going to be slower moving forward as the economy is stronger, and due to the aging demographics, as we have a big wave of baby boomers retiring today and really for the next 15 years. And while Gen X, the millennials, Generation Z, that's following, are larger than the baby boomers in absolute numbers, particularly here in Oregon, they're only a little bit bigger. And so our labor force will grow. That growth will be a little bit uneven across the state. Here we're looking at the coming decade for all 36 counties here in Oregon. On the x-axis horizontally is total population growth, and on the vertical axis, the y-axis, is expected labor force growth. So the number of residents in each county that's available to work based on labor force participation rates by age and what have you. And Oregon looks a lot better than the typical state. That said, 11 of our counties are still expected to see a shrinking labor force in the coming decade. And therefore, probably total employment will go down as a result, just due to the underlying demographics. And the workforce, the labor force, in every single one of our counties will increase at a slower rate than the total population, again, mostly due to slower migration patterns and a mature business cycle, a mature expansion, and also the retirements among the baby boomer cohort as they age out of their prime working years and into their earlier active retirement years. And this will put a lid on overall economic growth, income growth, and the like, just due to the demographics of the state. And as Mark was saying, this slowdown is not unexpected. We've had this slowdown in our forecast for at least the past 6 years, and it's largely come to fruition, particularly in this biennium. What this chart shows you is our current forecast today relative to to our forecast from 2 years ago, back in May of 2017, when you were working on putting the final touches to the 17-19 biennium, you can see our forecast for jobs, income, and population are within 1% of expectations from 2 years ago. So our economic forecast has largely been on track. And if anything, we've over-forecasted the economy. Here you can see we actually have less personal income in Oregon than expected over the last couple of years by about 1%, which is a little bit different than some of the information we're about to hear from Mark on the revenue side, right? So we've got the slowdown in the forecast. It's largely come to fruition. However, there's some different implications when it comes to tax policy, and Mark will get to that.
Yeah, if only we could say that the revenue forecast was closely playing out according to script. All the action in this round is on the revenue side. This year, the tax filing season was really remarkable, not just in Oregon, but across the U.S. Every income tax state, both corporate and personal, saw very strong gains during the filing season. Not as strong as Oregon, of course. We are on the upper edge of, you know, and rank among the top, as we typically do. But nevertheless, this is really a global phenomenon, and the most likely suspect here was the federal tax reform that took place in the middle of the biennium after we passed the last budget, giving taxpayers both the incentive to shift income into 2018, where rates were lower than in 2017 and potentially lower than they will be going forward in the future, as well as possibly increasing the base of Oregon, particularly for business income. But the tax filing season was crazy in the last couple months since we last met with this group. Both our corporate and our personal income tax collections are up more than 50% relative to last year. And it all came at once in terms of the filing season. Here's our tracking of this April. The Department of Revenue has now gotten about to the bottom of the pile, and things are starting to, the dust is starting to clear, and we're getting an idea of just how big this April was. The payments are on the right-hand side. Those are payments made with tax returns. And as you see, you know, most of them are processed there in the late April, early May. And 2019 is certainly an outlier compared with the last few years, where we're getting, you know, another $500 million or so of revenue above what a typical year would bring. On the refund side, that gives us even more, where our refunds have fallen back down to the level where they were 2 years ago in 2017. Of course, at that time, the economy was smaller than it is today. So that as well was a little bit of a surprise. And so obviously a lot of taxpayer behavior is involved here. We've got a lot of taxpayers shifting income into the 2018 period. And so the puzzle becomes how much of this is going to be permanent in terms of a broadening of bases or a bigger economy or, you know, things that we can expect to persist in the future, particularly in the next biennium that you all are wrestling with a budget for right now, and, you know, how much isn't sustainable. We know it all isn't sustainable. Here you see the growth in personal income tax collections. Again, are you know, the big driver of our overall general fund picture, and we've never seen a 3-month period with this kind of growth on record. So, as you know, given that we've had this stable economic outlook and the revenues are you know, blowing up, it's obvious that it's not just the economy, and this graph is trying to show that. I could have done several. I have several different versions of these effective tax rates. An effective tax rate is, you say, okay, how much tax revenue are we getting relative to the underlying economic driver? You know, we drive all our tax rates. Here we see corporate taxes as a share of corporate profits. And those have risen for the first time in years. Over from the 80s to the 2000s, we saw this erosion in the effective corporate tax rates, as in particular, as a lot of corporations changed their filing status from C-corps to pass-through entities and the like. And we also had increased tax competition among localities to try to bring in corporations and the like. And this was on a downward trend until the last 15 years or so, where it's been relatively stable. Now, little movements in these effective tax rates can really do a lot to the overall revenue picture, but nevertheless,
last, we were in a fairly narrow band until most recently when corporate taxes blew up. And so, you know, over the fiscal year to date, we're up over a third relative to the year before. And so some of this is probably certainly due to a little bit wider base. You know, there are arguments that we do have, you know, more access potentially to some of the global income or offshore income that may be getting reported and look to a larger degree now, and, you know, for federal tax purposes, and we piggyback off of that. And we're also seeing, of course, big movements in the personal tax and the effective tax rates there. Here I'm just showing wages. So how much are withholdings out of the paychecks relative to the wage bill? And that too is at an all-time high. But I could have just as easily done non-wage income, the same picture. If we're looking at capital gains and investment type income, the tax revenue relative to the amount that people are reporting, it seems a little bit out of whack. And so going forward, we expect some of this to come off. But nevertheless, it's made for a very remarkable year. So in the summary, you see here that the numbers are pretty darn big. As we get out of 2017-2019, the highlighted blue cell is the change in the ending balance since we were here 3 months ago, which is almost $870 million in additional resources in this current biennium. The story, of course, is less encouraging for the next biennium because of Oregon's unique kicker law, as unfortunately we're well above the 2% kicker threshold. We're at about 7.6% for the personal income tax forecast relative to 2 years ago. And that is going to come out of the revenue stream in 1921. So now we're expecting really no growth in revenues over the next biennium. But that said, there's still this ending balance that's left from this big biennium that can be pushed forward, and that's what the table on the right and the yellow highlighted cell would show. Well, okay, if we go ahead and don't spend all this $870 million in the next month, we can go ahead and push it forward into the next biennium, and so net. Putting the two together, we're looking at $737 million in additional available resources for the two. But as I said, we're well into the kicker territory here. And unfortunately, in terms of dollar value, this will be the largest kicker on record at $1.4 billion of return as a credit at the beginning of 2020. You see here, in terms of the share, it's not such a big deal. It's about once a decade we have one of these events. It typically comes near the end of a long business cycle, similar to where we are today. So at the bottom of this chart, we've done some quick back of the envelope estimates of what a typical filer could expect in 2020. Where the median filer would get a credit of $338, average filer $691, and then as with the income tax system as a whole, the liability is skewed towards high income folks, and so the average filer in the top 1% gets about $14,000 of a credit on their 2020 taxes should our estimates come to pass. And now at this point, the estimates are relatively stable over the last quarter. There's still some movement to go. We have one more big estimated payment in June, tax payment that we have yet to come, and some accounting true-ups that can be unexpected at the end of the year as well. But for now, now that we're through the tax processing season, a lot of the risk has passed, and we'll probably land somewhere here in this neighborhood.
In addition to the general fund itself, the lottery fund, or the economic development fund, is up a little bit relative to expectations from 3 months ago on the magnitude of $20 or $30 million a biennium. The lottery forecast has been raised for a couple of reasons. One is ongoing strength in video lottery sales. We're now 2 years past the opening of Alinea in Southwest Washington, Alinea Casino Resort. There has been an impact on sales, particularly along retailers of the border along the river. Those sales continue to be down relative to when prior to the casino, and maybe a little bit of erosion in some of those border retailers even over the last year. That said, the growth has been buoyed from the rest of the Portland metropolitan area and of course the rest of the state, which continues to see healthy economic gains, consumer spending, and the like. So overall, video lottery sales continue to grow at a healthy rate, and our forecast has been raised a little bit, and then a little bit of an improvement for the jackpot games. The sales have been a little bit stronger than expected, and we've made a couple technical adjustments to expected transfer rates or profit margins associated with some of those jackpot games. So overall, the lottery forecast has come in well above expectations for 17-19 as well, mostly due to the fact that the impact from Alinea was significantly less than expected. But the outlook is for ongoing growth and sales moving forward.
So, yeah, so relative to our counterparts in other states, this is a difficult day for us insofar as, like I said, this has been a really nationwide phenomenon in terms of the revenue surge. But all our counterparts, that's a happy story. They show up in front of their committees with more money to give. Unfortunately, with our unique kicker law, that's not the case. But we do have one really good piece of good news that comes out of it. And that's the reserve situation here in Oregon, as that's like this ending balance adds to an already large cushion of reserve. So at this point right now, we would estimate we end the current biennium with $3.5 billion in reserves, which is far and away larger than anything Oregon has ever enjoyed before. Hopefully giving us a little bit of a cushion for the downturn that is still to come. So with that, that's our allotted time for today. I'm happy to take any questions you guys might have.
Thank you. I'm going to ask the first one. A couple slides back, when you were explaining the kicker, you made a comment. It went by very quickly. You said it typically comes at the end of a business cycle. Could you say just a bit more about that?
Certainly. So. This is a difficult, it becomes very difficult to forecast the economy in particular at the end of the business cycle because you've seen we have this slowdown in built in, and this is really indicative of what the community of economists or forecasters do. It says we're getting towards the end, we know things aren't gonna last forever, and so a lot of times we hedge our bets on the downside. Well, that can be very, very dangerous in terms of the revenue forecast, because as you can see here, sometimes the revenue trends will divorce from the economic trends. So even if we get the slowdown correct, a lot of times we're gonna see a last ditch push in terms of these revenue growth. And it can either be because of overheating of the economy. The last couple of cycles, we saw at the very end, we saw a lot of speculative activity in terms of the tech boom and the housing boom, and we had speculation going on and generating a lot of tax revenue. But a lot of times it's also because of taxpayer behavior, either by cashing in a bunch of investment income that they've held for a long time all at once, because they too see the end is near, or in this case, probably responding to tax incentives, but things that come all at once. I didn't mean to suggest that it would be an indicator of a recession to come, because in fact we're facing the same dilemma here as we're going into setting this May forecast for the next biennium. You know, are we being too cautious? Will this expansion continue for a couple more years longer than we expect, which is traditionally the mistake that a lot of economists make. And so that's where we're really struggling right now with doing it. We've already seen some economists now are coming out and calling that next recession in 2020. I understand the city manager for Albany has called a recession. And they'll all be able to tell us, I told you so, when it happens, because, you know, in our position as a planning forecast, we really can't do that, because we suffer suffer from mistakes on both the upside and the downside. And so for us, our advisors suggest that, you know, the best, as hard as it is, the best strategy is just to try to stay the course as long as we're still expanding, put an expansion in the, a real one in the forecast. And then when we're sure we have a recession and see the whites of its eyes, then, you know, put a real recession in the forecast, pulling the Band-Aid off all at once. But that's a lot easier said than done. And you know, our human nature is to hedge our bets. And I think that's why the mistakes, the forecast errors get large towards the end of the cycle.
Thank you. Representative Finley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your hard work. Great job. I have a couple of questions. Back on slide 3, talked about some of the potential drags to the would slow the economy down under policy drags, no more tax cuts. So perhaps to maintain this and sustain this into the outcoming years, we should have more tax cuts instead of tax raises.
Well, from an accounting perspective, I'm sorry, Representative Finley, Chair Nathanson, from an accounting perspective, the tax cuts are already becoming a headwind. Because if you don't continue to cut taxes at a faster and faster rate, you know, as a, in terms of growth, it's not going to get you anything more. And so it's, you know, it's always a temporary phenomenon in terms of, you know, we don't have an endless number of bullets in our fiscal policy gun. And we shot a lot of them just about a year ago. And so even more importantly than the tax cuts would be that huge federal spending package, which also expires at the end of the federal fiscal year, which, you know, a lot of economists would argue have even larger and more direct impacts on economic growth. And so, unfortunately, the stimulus is temporary.
Well, not if we keep cutting taxes. But so, and then on slide 4, I find that's particularly disturbing that all the counties that are in negative growth, all are in Eastern Oregon. You have to attribute that to the urban-rural divide. You have to attribute that somewhat to the lack of available housing, the lack of available anything in Eastern Oregon. And I think that's very disturbing, and we need to work on that significantly.
Agreed, Representative Finley. There is a silver lining to this. Part of the reason that these communities are struggling economically has been the weight of the demographics and the aging population, which is which a lot of the rural, particularly eastern counties, are ahead of the curve. But going forward, that's not so bad compared to a lot of places that still need to take their medicine. And you see here in the graph, Wheeler is actually the only county that is above that line of even potential labor force growth and population growth. And so as a lot of the retiring baby boomers are headed out of the workforce in the Eastern Oregon, their labor force dynamics and population dynamics are actually starting to look better before the rest of the state. And so there is hope going forward.
Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to have time for probably only one more question and response because this meeting needs to adjourn at 8:30. Senator Haas.
Thanks. It's more of a comment. This is a historic windfall. And to me, in public finance, when you have a temporary phenomenon, a historic windfall, the appropriate position is you sock it away. And so I guess I would appeal to my fellow revenuers here to appeal to our colleagues that this goes to the rainy day fund or the PERS fund or something, not to spend it, because as you noted, it is a temporary phenomenon. And I've never seen anything like this. So.
Agreed. It's a very humbling experience for us as forecasters. It was truly a seismic event.
I'm sorry we don't have time for more questions and responses, but I don't know whether all of us need to be somewhere at 8:30, but I know there are some meetings starting at 8:30 that we need to get to. Conversations can continue in the future. Thank you for being with us today. We are adjourned.